The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
On tonight's housing special, how high is too high? What exactly is an affordable home? Will the recent tax hike drive cuckoo funds out of the suburbs? And what impact will the affordable housing legislation have on the housing market? All that and more on tonight's Late Debate, but first the news with Moira Hannan. Thanks, Moira. Good evening and welcome to our Late Debate Housing Special. Joining us tonight, we have Ono Brent, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Midwest and spokesperson on housing, local government and heritage. Mary Fitzpatrick, Fianna Fáil Senator and Shannon spokesperson on housing, local government and heritage. Rebecca Moynihan, Labour Party Senator and spokesperson on housing. Killian Wood, Senior Business Reporter with the Business Post. And Orla Hegarty, Assistant Professor at the UCD School of Architecture and Planning. We want to hear what you think, so get in touch. You can text us on 51551. One email latedebate@rte.ie, or you can tweet to @latedebate_rte. Well, we decided to end our season on Late Debate with a special programme on the issue that has bedevilled successive governments and one that is likely to shape the Dublin Bay South by-election campaign, and that issue is, of course, housing. Have a listen first to some voices of those who are impacted by the current housing crisis.
A family of five in a three-bed house, I wouldn't mind scaling up, but that's not going to be a possibility in the near future with the way things are. I've young kids, but at some stage they're going to be trying to get onto it, so I do want to see it resolved in some way so the future is brighter for them and they can own their own place.
I think my big concern really is that there's no real definition of what affordable housing is. Is it 150, 250, 350, 450? What is the definition? So I think that politically there should be more clarity. My view with the central bank is that if somebody has, let's say, is paying 1,500 a month for a two-bed for 2 years, then, you know, why wouldn't they be allowed 300,000 of a loan, and which is only 1,400 a month?
It's scary. It's very, very scary to think that, like, overnight you could literally lose most of your wages to your rent. And I know a lot of people who would kind of be screwed, to be honest, if anything happened, like if they suddenly, you know, if you suddenly have an illness or you suddenly have something, you've nowhere to go. I think a lot of people expect everyone to have a really good family background who'll support them no matter what happens.
I mean, we're looking at the moment and it's just crazy. It's a little bit kind of soul destroying. You get your hopes up and then you kind of regularly get them kind of dashed again. It just seems like it's constantly out of reach, like, you know. I don't know where it goes, like, you know, and it just means you're constantly putting your life on hold until you can try and find somewhere. But it seems the more you go looking, the further away it seems. So you're trying to just kind of keep it together or whatever, like, you know.
And there were some people speaking to our producer, Carlin Dalton, today. And one of the people in that clip raised a question, a very important question that I want to put to all of you. This is the definition of affordable and whether or not houses right now are, in our urban centres in particular, are too expensive. Ona Brin.
Yeah, sure. So look, there should be no mystery on affordability. Affordability should be related to people's ability to pay. And the SRI did a very important study which was published in the summer of 2018, which introduced a very clear definition of affordability, 30% of net take-home pay, but leaving you enough money to be able to afford a decent standard of living. And it's a metric that's used in many other jurisdictions. The difficulty is, if you look not just at the daft.ie prices, but if you look at the two Society of Chartered Surveyors reports from December last year on houses and apartments in February of this year, both show that for about 80% of the population, new build rents for apartments and new build purchases for house and apartments are way beyond the reach of that 80%. It's simply too expensive.
Can I put to you, though, that this is all, you know, everybody agrees with this when you're talking about houses and apartments being built, you know, from here on out. But what about the impact of bringing down the price of house, the policies that would reduce the price of house for people who own their houses, who are quite comfortable with their houses and probably quite comfortable with their houses being priced where they are right now?
So I've argued for a very, very long time a core objective of government housing policy has to be to bring the actual cost of the delivery, both of new homes and refurbished second homes, down. You cannot have
delivery, yeah, but I'm saying, are you going to be knocking on doors in Dublin Bay South with people who have some very nice, very expensive houses and say, when we get into government, we will ensure we will introduce policies that will reduce the price of your house?
And again, I've been saying it for years. House prices are too high. They have to come down. The idea, for example, that it is not possible to deliver a new two-bedroom apartment in Dublin city centre for anything less than €400,000 a year, which is what the SCSI report shows that we're way beyond normal. To buy that property, you would need to have a combined household income of €100,000 a year. Only 14% of households in the state have that. That's 86% of households excluded from being able to buy a rent, an affordable apartment in Dublin City. House prices have to come down both for renters and for buyers as well.
And for sellers, as in people selling their homes would have to accept that they can't expect to get what they're now...
Because think about it, if we continue to do this, then the difficulty is we undermine our competitiveness, we take money out of the pockets of people who'd be spending in the local economy, and people simply cannot afford to rent or buy. They have to come down. That has to be the key.
Okay, is Ivana Bacci going to be saying that on the doors of Dublin Bay South?
I can't speak for Ivana, but I think so, yes. And one of the things that we did in the Affordable Housing Bill was try and insert a definition of affordability into the Affordable Housing Bill, because what the minister is doing and proposing is essentially tying it to below market rent. And to just come back to that point of yours that you were making about people selling their houses, if I sell my house, I'm going to sell my house because I want to buy another house. So it's in my interest that the other house that I'm buying is going to be affordable as well. For most people, housing and the place that they live in is their home, and they view it as a home and they don't view it as an investment. I think if people are flipping houses or people want to make money from houses, I think it has an impact on them. But the reality is most people want to live in the house that they own, and if they are trading up or buying bigger, they also want that other house to be affordable. And I think that's at the heart of
and
the
house. And you don't think there'll be a pushback from people who regard their home as their one big investment in their lives that they will, you know, have something to pass on maybe to their children? That you don't think that there are people out there right now who would be, you know, not that happy about a mass reduction in the price of houses?
The concern that I'm hearing is a concern from a generation that can't afford to pay the rents that they're paying. And then if you knock on doors, their parents, who that generation are living at home, and their parents want to see their children have the same lifestyle that they have, as opposed to counting their money on the house that they are there and they're living in. And I think that's the key part of it. And I think that's the key point of it. When we did this in the 2000s and everybody got caught up in a speculative frenzy of how much money that you can earn and make off housing from just buying it, a lot of people were left in negative equity when the music stopped.
Well, I can tell you now.
That's the key concern.
I can tell you now, and I'll put this to you, Mary Fitzpatrick. I've been talking to estate agents around this city over the last weeks and months, and they will tell you that particularly in the last 2 or 3 months, that it is 2006 all over again out there. That it is white hot, that there are houses coming on the market and they're gone 10, 15, 20% over asking within a week or 10 days of going on the market. Like, there's something
scary there's going on. There's something very scary about it. Absolutely, Katie. I completely agree with you. I wouldn't disagree with anything you've said. Housing is unaffordable, particularly in Dublin, particularly in our urban centres. That's why the two prongs to our approach in terms of addressing the housing crisis are increasing supply, but increasing also affordability. One of the reasons the market is red hot or white hot at the moment is because supply has stopped almost with the COVID pandemic. There's been a shutdown. We're coming out of a decade of undersupply of housing. So there's a real pinch point around supply. We have to address the supply issue, and that's what the government's approach is. We're addressing supply through empowering local authorities to build affordable homes, both to purchase and rent. I agree with Owen on that. We need to address affordability both for people to purchase their homes and to rent. The state needs to take a lead in this. The state is taking a lead in this. That's why we're legislating to ensure that the local authorities can build again, that every new development will have ring-fenced social and affordable units in it. But we're also in the short term supporting first-time buyers to actually acquire their own home. And we define affordability, just so that your listeners are clear, affordability will be defined as being, at the moment, homes that will start at 160,000
euros.
But
why are you starting at figures and not starting
at people's
incomes?
Well,
there's
a principle. I'll tell you where the principle comes from. It comes from, for it to be affordable, it has to be sustainable. And for it to be sustainable, it should fall within the macroprudential banking rules. the borrowing and the lending rules. What that means is if people can manage to sustain the borrowings that they're taking on, then that's affordable. And if they're not sustainable, it is not affordable to them. And that's what the affordability will be determined by.
But this effort, as you say, to support first-time buyers to mm-hmm. get into the market.
It's one element. It's only one element.
It's a very controversial element.
The shared equity scheme, absolutely, it has attracted a lot of controversy. It attracted most of the controversy before the scheme was actually published, though, Katie. And since it has been published, and the controlling factors that have been we are in the process of putting into the shared equity scheme will control inflation. There is a problem, though, around inflation, Katie, and we have to be honest with people.
You just 2 minutes ago told us that there is a massive supply problem out mm-hmm. there right now. It is a really serious problem.
Yeah.
And you're proposing to pump more money into that market.
Well,
and that's, like, what can possibly happen except that money will drive up the prices of available homes?
Okay, so what the shared equity scheme will do two things. It will support first-time buyers who are paying more in rent to secure a mortgage and to buy a home. It will help those people who are constrained from being able to secure a mortgage at the moment. But on top of that, what it will do is trigger an increased supply of home building by private builders. So currently there is approximately 50,000 planning applications unactivated for first-time buyer homes. These are new homes. These will be new
this
supply.
This is, according to Robert Watt, something that developers have lobbied for
yeah.
and because they want to drive up
yeah.
the price of houses.
And to be fair to Robert Watt, Robert Watt gave that opinion back in October or September of last year, before the scheme was published, before the control factors were put in place. And the ESRI themselves said it in their criticism, because I was there at the Joint Oireachtas Committee when they told us that their analysis was based on all the situation remaining static. Okay. So no increased supply, no control on the prices of the homes, no control on the purchasers
okay, let
or
me
the
put
borrowers.
That to, let,
all of those control factors have been put in place.
Let me put that to Orla Hegarty. Orla, criticism came before we saw what this shared equity scheme was really going to involve.
It did, yes. I mean, I think there's a lot of work being done in the past by NESC and by various people. But the core issue here is that our market price housing in the cities is extremely out of reach of the vast majority of people. A very small percentage of people can afford to live in Dublin now, whether that's purchase or how rental prices have risen. And the supply is not going to solve that problem. Supply is not going to bring down prices by a third. And even if you take the view that it would take 4 years to reach some point of equilibrium in supply. The implications of that is that prices would continue to rise for the next 4 years, and that's just completely untenable. Developers won't build into a market where there aren't purchasers. So the schemes such as shared equity to try and bridge that gap, you know, that enormous gap between what people are earning and what developers want for housing, is effectively going to be a second mortgage. It's just be a deferred mortgage for people. But more importantly, it'll only make that housing affordable to the first purchasers. It won't be passed on. I think we really need to go back to first principles here, which is that as an economy and as a society, people need permanent homes and they need it to be affordable. We have land, we have an ability to build housing in the region of 250,000, which would be well within the affordability of many people, and rent might be around 1,000 related to that. And in the process of that, we need to put protections in so that people who have existing housing and mortgages are protected and their prices aren't crashed.
Mary, you were shaking your head there.
I agree with Orla, absolutely. The shared equity scheme is not the silver bullet, and in and of itself, it will not solve the affordability or the housing crisis. It is only one element. The main element has to be the state taking the lead in the increased supply of housing, and for the first time in over a decade, starting to supply affordable housing, and affordable housing both to purchase and rent. That's what the Affordable Housing Bill will do. It will have local authorities and approved housing bodies and the Land Development Agency take state-owned land, use the benefit of that cost, roughly a third of the cost, to reduce the cost of the provision of housing and to provide those houses as affordable homes, okay. both to purchase and rent.
Okay,
that's the priority. That is what is going to be the game changer. But that will take a bit of time, we all know that.
OK, let me bring in Cillian Woods. Cillian Woods from the Business Post. Cillian, you're very welcome to the programme. You've been looking at that Affordable Housing Bill. Will it be the game changer?
Well, and just to go back to some of the points you were talking about there, and it was interesting that you, in the Vox Pop, the guy was talking about what is affordable, but I think we need to strip that back to what is, and have a more understanding of what is unaffordable at the moment. It's much more easier to, a barometer to go in on and actually to start basing what affordable is on what is unaffordable. And it's much easier to dictate and see what that is. And that's what the Affordable Housing Bill is trying to do. It's trying to put, you know, very tough definitions on what affordability is, but that's quite tough for, I know people in the Department of Housing are racing around trying to figure out what affordability is, but I feel from talking to some of them in there, they're kind of missing the point of addressing what is unaffordable at the moment. What we're seeing at the moment is unaffordable prices have been baked into plans that have been kicked up by the LDA, the Land Development Agency, and just being built at the moment. So what's being built is unaffordable, and get a barometer for what that actually is. We see that in LDA development in Shangana, where, you know, one beds are coming into the, are going in there, which will most likely be targeted as singles, at €1,000 a month. And I think that's where people start to get panicked about what affordable, what is unaffordable, because they see €1,000 a month for a one bed, they'll likely be renting that on their own. Unlikely couples are going to rent that, because couples will likely want to have children, want to expand their household size. So we're looking at singles, and that's where we're seeing the unaffordability is what I think we need to actually get a better understanding of is. And the LDA example there in Shangana is just a good example, because we're talking at €12,000 a year on a person, maybe a median worker there gets €36,000 a year in wages and income, and they are always, were immediately seeing a significant chunk, 33% of their wages going on housing. And there, and that's I think why we're seeing a tipping point now, and a lot of people talking about affordability and what unaffordable is because we're seeing not just that that's going in rent, that's money that now can't go on to buying coffees, going to the restaurants the weekend, can't go on childcare. And when we've seen that now, when you are paying more than 33% or more than 30% of your income on housing or on your rent or on your mortgage, you are deemed as being more likely to not be able to meet other critical bills, so more childcare. But then it's a knock-on effect that you're not being able to live in the city, and workers leaving, and then business people losing their staff. So I think we need to get back to what is unaffordable rather than trying to pie in the sky thinking about what is affordable housing.
Mary.
Yeah, I agree entirely with Killian. I see it in Dublin Central all the time. You know, nurses, teachers, guards, they can't afford to live there. And it absolutely is the case. That's why the government's priority is around using state lands to have local authorities and approved housing bodies and some private investment, ethical and sustainable investors. We have to increase the state supply of housing. The state has to take a lead in this. The market has absolutely failed, and we have to fix this.
You want to disagree with a word that Mary Fitzpatrick is saying there?
Well, the problem is what Mary is saying and what the government is doing aren't actually the same thing. So first of all, let's deal with the supply side measures. So when Darragh O'Brien increased the Help to Buy to 10% of the purchase price of the home up to €30,000, that immediately had an inflationary impact on house prices. And we know that because really good work on social media, for example, by the individual behind Crazy House Prices, has documented that. And all over the country, we saw an extra 10 or 20 grand being thrown onto the price of houses. We also know from an independent Oireachtas report into the Help to Buy scheme that 60% of the people who got that financial support from the state didn't need it, had a deposit and had enough money to buy a house. So those schemes don't work. The difficulty with the shared equity scheme is actually, according to the central bank in a letter to me last week, they haven't been given the final detail of the scheme as yet. So we've been kind of drip feeding bits and pieces of it, but we know the rough outline of it.
Does it need central bank approval to?
No. So the central bank would have to approve the pillar banks participating in it and doubling the funding for it, and that decision is in train. And they may not decide to do that, but we need to be very clear. Everything that is in the public domain about the scheme today shows it is virtually identical to the scheme in England and Wales. And the crucial point about that scheme was it didn't increase supply in areas like London where it's needed, and it increased house price inflation by about 6%. But here's the crucial thing. Yes, we're dealing with legislation. We have the Affordable Housing Bill. There's some good things in it. There's some really terrible things in it. We have the LDA bill in it, and it's a real dog's dinner in my view. But the real test of government's commitment to public housing is the amount of money that they invest. And the difficulty is, in the budget that was announced by Darragh O'Brien last year, the actual increase in capital investment above the targets that had already been set by Owen Murphy and Fine Gael was derisory. And that's why the ESRI report from 2 weeks ago was so important. Unless we double direct capital investment and double the actual volume of homes, social and affordable, delivered every year, we're not going to tackle this crisis. And what I have yet to hear from government, and I'm looking forward to Darragh O'Brien's housing plan when he publishes it, is he going to commit to doubling capital investment? Is he going to move from 10,000 public homes a year to 20,000? ESRI says 18, Sinn Féin says 20. And crucially, will they be genuinely affordable? Because under some of the affordable housing schemes, Mary is right, for example, in Cork, the Boer Boy scheme there, which is very good, it'll be 165 to about 230. But I know Devonny Gardens, an affordable home will set you back 310,000 plus a 50 grand equity stake to the local authority at some future point.
Can I just actually...
That is not affordable.
Okay.
Very good. And then I'll let you in, Rebecca.
Can we just talk about the government's capital spend? It's 2.2 billion. The ESRI said that. I'm not saying that. That's the ESRI.
Well, what the ESRI said, and I have it here in front of me, that the government should consider doubling its current investment in housing from 2 billion to 4 billion, which could deliver 18,000 units a year.
Absolutely.
Additional units.
Absolutely. And I don't disagree with that at all.
Doubling, that we need to double our...
I don't disagree at all. I think the ESRI report is very helpful. I think it indicates
very
clearly.
So you absolutely agree with Sinn Féin and
Labour
policy on this?
What's amusing about Owen's picking and choosing of his facts from the SRI is that he called for it to be increased to 2 billion. We're already spending 2 billion this year. We've got the biggest social housing programme in over a decade. There'll be 12,750 social homes.
But this would be an extraordinary thing, Mary, though. If you were to move from 2 billion to 4 billion.
It's sustainable. It's sustainable, so it is, when your growth far
exceeds
your interest.
But the minister isn't suggesting this, is he?
The minister is considering the report. The government is considering the report. The government and the minister will unveil a new housing plan in July, Housing for All. The government is not in place 12 months, and in that 12 months already introduced the biggest housing budget in the history of the state, the biggest capital budget in the history of the state. This is the biggest social housing programme in over a decade, and there's no legislation for affordable housing.
One of the reasons
we don't have affordable housing on market is because it was abolished back in 2011. There is no such thing as affordable housing until we legislate for it, and Sinn Féin need
that's
to stop
also,
opposing it.
I'm going to give an example where the Fianna Fáil government could immediately make a difference in terms of delivery of public housing and public land, and that's the Oscar Traynor road site. And this evening the city councillors got a report from the management on the Oscar Traynor road site, and the report said that 60% of what's being proposed in terms of housing delivery does not have available exchequer funding beyond the 50,000 site subsidy fund per affordable housing. So we can talk about the bills that are coming down the line, and we can talk and very welcome what Mary is saying this evening and has been consistent in saying, but the real question is the delivery of it. And we have a site that has the potential to deliver over 800 homes in Dublin that can be fully funded. What the councillors have asked for is 40% social, 40% cross rental and 20% affordable purchase. And the government need to put their money where their mouth is with this, allow the city council to develop that as public housing on public land and not try and bring in developers as we have done previously in the past. And Mary and I were both involved in O'Devonny Gardens. I think both of us uncomfortable with the deal, but felt because the Department of Housing weren't making other money available that that was our only option in terms of housing delivery on it. But we actually have a chance in the Oscar Traynor Road to do this now.
And we still have a chance in O'Devonny Gardens.
Let me just let Owen in because he was...
Sure. So just again, let's see with the facts. So the total capital spend in the housing section of the Department of Housing this year is 2.2 billion, but only 1.4 billion of that goes directly on the delivery of social and affordable homes. A lot of the rest goes on adaptation grants and other things. So it's 1.4 billion is all of the money that goes into new and refurbished homes. We've been arguing consistently for 4 or 5 years that has to be doubled to at least 2.8 billion. What that would allow you to do is to go from the 10,000 units that is currently in the plan of new built and bought real social affordable homes to 20,000. Now, I have to say, Fianna Fáil did campaign on that commitment in the election manifesto. Mary knows that. Dara O'Brien has subsequently abandoned that and rubbished it every time I have said it. But let's be very clear. If Dara O'Brien comes out in June or July with his Homes for All plan, and if he says, I've learnt the error of my ways, I'm no longer working under the shadow of Owen Murphy, and I'm going to double capital investment in the direct delivery of social affordable homes, and I'm going to start by fast-tracking finance into Oscar Traynor to deliver those 800-plus genuine affordable homes, I'll welcome it. Here's my concern, right? And Mary and I are both members of the Housing Committee, as Rebecca is. It is only when we see how much extra investment, and we've had one budget from this government, and there was a derisory extra 35 million for affordable rental and a derisory extra 160 million for social. 10,000 real social homes a year is nowhere near enough to deal with the social housing crisis and the homelessness crisis. And how many affordable homes to rent and buy will be delivered this year? Less than 600. How many next year? Less than 700. How many the year after? Less than 1,000. That is not matching the rhetoric that we're hearing from Mary Beer.
Fitzpatrick, I'll bring in Orla first.
That's completely playing with figures. Owen and Sinn Féin have objected and opposed more housing developments.
We will deal with that in a moment. But Orla Hegarty, what Mary Fitzpatrick is saying there, that the minister is considering this ESRI report, that would make a massive difference in delivery of housing, surely.
Well, I think the idea of cost and what it'll cost to build houses is being completely misunderstood, actually. If the government were to decide to do a school building programme or a hospital programme, they would incur the entire capital cost and they would get the benefit over time. But housing is completely different. It's a series of very small units that are built incrementally and phased. And once they're built, they're a performing asset. The person who lives there is either paying rent or paying a mortgage. So you just need seed funding to get housing going. You don't need all of the money. So it's really a case of how it's set up strategically. The bigger issue will be capacity, not finding the money, capacity in the sector so that people have access to actually get on with building. And, you know, if there is talk of money, it would be much better to give seed funding of $1 million each to a lot of SME builders, give them a license to public land, which could all be done very, very quickly, and let them start building in phases and roll over that funding into the next phase and into their own private developments. That'll build capacity in the market, and it'll build future capacity so that we have our own native house building sector. It'll keep people from emigrating and it'll give apprenticeships and regional jobs. In the shorter term, we have a lot of vacancy. So the most immediate crisis before house building can ramp up at scale can be met with a lot of vacancy. And we have now a lot of regional towns that have been very damaged by the pandemic, and the city areas where people have vacancy in commercial buildings and on upper floors. They could have an income stream. I mean, local businesses who have shops and hairdressers in towns could be supported to do conversions of upper floors to take off the slack and to house people very quickly. And none of the existing vacant, you know, or available housing and building stock has been factored into any of the estimates of what's needed. So there are loads of, options available that can do things quickly if it's about housing. But the focus seems to have been entirely about a residential property market and attracting investment. You know, if the focus is supporting the property sector, that's not going to solve the housing problem. I think the focus has been misplaced.
OK, let me talk about that focus on attracting investment and the investment sector. I want to bring in again Cillian, because you have written extensively about the role that investment funds are now playing in the property, in the housing market.
Yeah, and I suppose we've revealed in the Business Post since the start of May kind of how much of a stranglehold a lot of the funds have gotten on the housing market in Ireland. And not, you know, this is a worldwide trend. You know, Ireland tends to follow London and the US and bigger cities. And in what happens here, we're seeing this trend happen in the US, where funds are coming in and competing with just regular owner-occupier buyers just looking to buy for a home and outbidding them by tens, if not hundreds of thousands of euros. So we revealed that obviously the housing estate was large amount of it was bulk bought by a fund.
This is the Maynooth housing,
Mullen Park, and then obviously the state then was investing in some of these cuckoo funds, so-called cuckoo funds that are competing with buyers to buy up homes. And then we're also talking about, you know, the smaller investor groups of between, you know, 10 and 100 million. That doesn't sound small, but in the property that's small, buying just one off, like just second hand homes or even derelict homes, and doing them up and putting them back into the market and as a rental or leasing them to the council. But there's one thing though from the ESRI report, feel from last week, that was about boosting capital spend into social and affordable housing, that was missed and we haven't touched on yet, is that it outright says that the private sector is struggling to meet the demand. I think that gets down to a nub of what I suppose is what quite misunderstood in housing and language and terminology we use. We keep talking about 35,000 housing demand. It's not really a 35,000 housing demand we have. We demand really comes from the private sector, and the private sector building for the people who can get mortgages to buy. What we actually have is between the 20,000 homes built last year, let's say, the difference in 15, that's a housing need. And that's what the ESRI are kind of hinting towards in that report, is that we have a need now for the state to come in and build those 15,000 homes, because if the private market delivered an extra 15,000 homes, we'd be looking at a lot of vacancies because people can't afford to buy those. So actually, that's what the ESRI report is really boiling down to. We're tic-tacking over what actually state investment is in different parts of the housing market. What really the ESRI thing was missed in it was people, they were saying the private market cannot get to this 35,000 need we have. The state needs to jump in here, and this is how it can do it. And you know, and you've seen now in the vacuum that's created, where the state's not investing in building its own social housing, and is competing itself with buyers for buying of social stock straight off the market just before it comes to market. You know, that's where we're seeing funds have a kind of stranglehold in the market.
Yeah, I just want to give people, because we did ask people to get in touch with us, and I just want to give you a sense of what people are telling us. Our listeners are telling us tonight, we are condemning citizens to a lifetime of renting to ensure they will never be able to afford their own home. Elephant in the room is low income threshold for access to social housing. If it was raised significantly, many would choose this option, and the stigma attached to social housing would evaporate. That's it.
And it's a really important point. So the thresholds for social housing were last set in 2011. They haven't been adjusted with inflation. So we now have working families who might have had a modest increase in their income. They might have been 9 or 10 years on a local authority housing waiting list, and when they're reassessed, they lose all of those years and aren't eligible for any rental supports. And of course, they're doubly disadvantaged. There has been a constant call from not only opposition, but in fairness, from backbenchers from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael for a decade to increase these. Yet the current position of government, from a parliamentary question I got from the minister recently, is they're not minded currently to raise those thresholds. And that creates a real challenge, because as we introduce affordable rental, which is for those people above those thresholds, if those rents are, as we're hearing from government, 1,200 or 1,300 euros for a 2 and a 3 bed, for the household who's, say, 5 or 10,000 euros above the threshold for social housing, 1,200 or 1,300 euros for a cost rental is about 40% of their take-home pay. It's not affordable. So again, we need to have real, clear, joined-up thinking. But what we also need to ensure is, for example, there are many developers out there who have no difficulty building and selling. Right, they have huge amounts of planning permission, service sites, and access to very good financial supplies. The problem is it's not in their interests to build out all of the development land they have. And therefore, up until COVID, you were seeing quite a constrained building and supply.
Deliberately trickling supply into the market.
Say trickling is probably a bit too tight a word, but they were controlling the supply, right? Because, of course, that was in their business model. That made economic sense. And there are two ways to bypass that. First of all is do what we've been saying for years in the SRI, double direct capital investment and get the state doing its job. But the second thing is we have to start getting tougher, not with struggling small and medium-sized builders who are having difficulties with finance. They need support. But with the large developers who, for example... More than that, use it or lose it planning permission, use it or lose it zoning, and a vacant site tax that is actually going to be collected. What is Minister O'Brien proposing? An across-the-board two-year extension on planning permissions. I have no problem giving extensions of planning permission to struggling and small and medium-sized builders. But see the really big developers out there? They don't need extensions. The very opposite. They need to be told, get up, use the money in the planning permission you have, build and sell, while the state is also expanding genuinely affordable homes at prices people can afford to rent or buy.
Can I say in that case, like, there actually isn't much of a difference between like the large some of the large developers and how they act and how the smaller builders there that Owen's talking about act. And I think it's misrepresented. We look at like a large developer and say, oh, they're delivering hundreds and hundreds of homes. But actually, like over a time period, the smaller builders can match them. If they're developing 10 homes at a time, a small builder can develop 10 homes at a time just as much as a large developer can, especially developing larger housing estates. So that would be like the incentive to go for smaller builders. Like, they can go at the same rate as these bigger builders because, again, they do phase their developments when they're building homes.
Yeah, houses. Rebecca.
Yeah, so just on touch on what Owen was talking about there, I had a situation in my own constituency this week where there was a good development for apartment units, good apartment size units with balconies up to apartment standards. That was given in 2018. They have now come back now and are doing three times the size of it, or three times the amount, and it's built to rent and long-term built to rent. And I'm seeing that replicated over a number of different sites where essentially they're speculating on what they can do. So they're getting planning permission and they're leaving the planning permission there. And then when standards or guidelines change, they go in, lobby, get guidelines change, and then come back again for another bite of the cherry where they can get more units on it.
Yeah, Orla, I know you have written about this in the past.
Yes, I When the standards were reduced to a new standard, which is lower for build to rent, was bought in, and I think it's been really regressive. It means that certain blocks would just have all small units, which is very bad for a mix in an area. The smaller the apartment, the better the yield for investors. So obviously the incentive is to build small. But once they design blocks with a lot of small units, they're also using that to justify not having creches and other amenities in the building. And if you look at, we haven't really seen them being built yet, but if you look at some of the planning permissions for these, they're not going to attract families and people to live in the city. They're often very small, looking into internal areas, looking into other buildings, very overshadowed with limited amounts of daylight. And, you know, people, if we want sustainable developments in the city, we need to make it attractive and affordable for families to live in the cities. Creating these kind of buildings really may be the ghost estates of the future, because anybody who has choice does have choice in Ireland whether to move out to the suburbs or to work remotely somewhere else if they can afford it. It's the people who can't afford it who will be living concentrated in the city. So we're creating future problems with a lot of the lower standards.
And Katie, just to say, I tabled a piece of legislation that would have ended this kind of dual standards, basically to get rid of build-to-rent standards so that whether you're renting or buying, you have the same standard apartment, last year, who voted it down in the Dáil, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Green Party. And it's really, really worrying, because if you walk around the Docklands, particularly a lot of the new development at the back of the convention centre, it is exactly as Orla said. There is no schools, there is no community facilities, it's high-end transient rental. And that runs completely contrary to government policy, which is to have genuinely affordable mixed tenure, social, affordable rental and affordable purchase, as well as higher-end purchase, so that we get a really, really good mix. And of course, part of the problem is rents are so high, right? So until we actually start saying it's time to ban rent increases, try and find ways of putting money back in renters' pockets and delivering large volumes of genuinely affordable accommodation, then the bad policies of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and unfortunately the Green Party are going to further damage our city centre.
Yeah. You rolled your eyes there when Owen O'Brien said it's time to ban rent increases.
I didn't. I was rolling my eyes when he was talking about there being no schools. Sorry, in the Docklands, there's three schools in several places, three fabulous primary schools in several places, and there's a number of schools within a stone's throw from there on Marlborough Street and Sean McDermott Street.
Do you believe those developments, though, down there around the Docklands are family-friendly community-building developments?
Katie, no, they're not. And that's why I get back to the point that I've been making and that the government keeps making, is we need to have the state take the lead in the provision of affordable homes. The market is not going to do it, has not done it, will not do it. We all recognise that. That's why we have a crisis of affordability. And that's what we're setting about doing. We're legislating so that the state can take the lead in the provision of affordable homes. Killian said there that the state is buying up social homes. That's just factually incorrect. This year, the social housing programme will deliver... is targeted to deliver 12,750 homes. Only 800 of them will be acquired. And I don't object to them being acquired. And I'll tell you why, Katie. Because in my constituency as well, we're providing over 60% of all the emergency...
But if you're not buying them, you're leasing them. Like local authorities are leasing them on 25-year leases.
9,500 of them will be built, be direct build. There will be a portion of them leased. But again, let me give you an example
over
of the 2, leasing.
Units. Can
2,000 units, yeah. You're right. Absolutely, Rebecca. And I will not apologise for the local authority, Dublin City Council, leasing these apartments. Let me give you an example. In Stony Batter, Katie, there's 24 purpose-built brand new apartments, A energy rated. They are being leased by the City Council to give people homes. 24 families will get homes.
Why
there.
Not buy them?
Because they weren't for sale. These families...
For as long as... Seriously. Because this is a huge issue for a lot of people. They look at this time and time again. They're wondering, why have our local authorities spending enormous amount, like leasing these properties at very, very high rents for 25 years?
I object.
And at the end of the 25-year lease, they have nothing to show for that output.
Because they haven't got to the end of the 25-year lease.
No, but they've leased it.
What I object to more is the local authority is paying twice that amount to house families in substandard temporary accommodation. So families.
Okay, they're both wrong. So why not buy the apartments?
Absolutely. Why not build them? That's what we're setting about doing. We're going to build.
But can
that's
I put
the priority
to you that as long as there is a market for these long leases, that is what developers will build for.
But Katie, if we were waiting for the developers to solve our housing crisis, it's not going to happen. That is the truth of it. The state has to take the lead in increasing supply and increasing affordability. The market hasn't done it. The market won't do it. Okay. That's not to say there isn't a place for private developers to continue in the market. But the ESRI itself says the private market has not delivered, cannot deliver. The capacity isn't there. Yep. The state has to take the lead.
Okay.
It's a social investment. That's what it is. This is social infrastructure.
Well, I don't think anyone in this studio is going to disagree with that point, but I think the disagreement comes as where we see it in practice. I'm going to have to take a break. We'll be back after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
I think, Killian, you were trying to get in there when we went to that break.
Look, we could get into a back and forth of being factually, saying people are factually incorrect, but unfortunately the Senator Fitzpatrick is factually incorrect in what she's saying, and that the state is not buying up homes. It is happening in councils. I'm talking to the people in house in council who are told to go out and at a near finished development and bring a checkbook and say we'll buy them off you for higher than the price of the first time buyers, their right owner occupiers will. And you just need to look at the funding that the government is, the state is drawing down for where housing is coming from. The state is not leading as a developer in building homes, and it was proven last year that it's not leading in the development of homes.
And the figures speak for themselves. So, for example, last year there was just over 6,000 real social homes built by the state, I suppose, from the government's figures. Only 700 of those were actually developed by local authorities, and only 300 or 400 were developed by AHBs. Everything else was purchased in one form or another as turnkeys, PPPs or Par 5s in the private sector. Now, I'm not objecting to that because we need those homes. But the issue is as follows. Until we start trusting the local authorities, such as, for example, in Oscar Traynor, to start doing large-scale projects themselves, ensuring they have the funding and the resourcing, what will happen is you'll have a new build, in inverted commas, strapline on the annual department's figures, which says 6,000. But when you drill down and you actually look at who's developing those, last year it was only 1,000 directly developed by local authorities approved housing bodies. Everything else is acquired off the plans as turnkeys, PPPs.
Which, of course, then are units that other people can.
I'm not objecting to those, but we have to dramatically change that relationship. And that means putting the money where it's required, not in waste of money, long-term leases that don't provide people with security of tenure and a bad value for money for the taxpayer, but building and buying large volumes of social and affordable homes.
Okay, Mayor, you're waving an ESRI special article at me.
Well, it's just the report, the ESRI report, Killian. I'm genuinely not making this up. It's on page 6 of the ESRI report when it talks about the government's plan for capital build this year and capital investment, and it specifically says that there's forecast to add 12,750 additional units to the social housing stock.
2,500 of those are long-term leases.
Please,
of the 2,500 are long-term leases.
I didn't interrupt you.
And of the 10,000, only a fraction are developed by local authorities.
9,500 are to be built, 800 are targeted acquisitions, as I said, and 2,450 are to be leased. And I agree. I don't think leasing long-term is a good idea.
Stop wasting taxpayers'
money,
Mary.
I'm not prepared. The waste of taxpayers' money is already going on. It's double the waste because of the emergency accommodation.
Build
paying
and
four
buy
grand.
Okay,
absolutely.
That's what we're pursuing,
building. But in the meantime, what Sinn Féin is willing to do is delay the housing crisis for many people by 5, 10, 15 years by not actually putting in place for this period of time these leases. 2,400 leased units, that's 2,400 families. That's more than 5,000 people potentially who will have a home, who will have a secure, affordable, A energy rated home. Many of them are in temporary overcrowded accommodation. I would not, and the state is paying double the amount for that really substandard accommodation that they're in at the moment. I would not apologise for the state doing the right thing there in actually providing these people with real homes, secure homes, affordable homes, not in 5 or 10 or 15 years' time, but today.
Okay, Rebecca.
I know people got their keys this week.
Where does Labour stand on giving these people secure, affordable homes in these circumstances?
Leasing is not good value for money in the long term. And just the figures that Mary is referring to there, in comparison to rebuilding Ireland, which I think Fianna Fáil were quite critical of, it's only just under 600 direct build homes, additional funding under the July budget than was there under rebuilding Ireland. So it's actually not significantly even changing the targets around direct builds from rebuilding Ireland. And I think that's important to point out. And I'll go back again and I'll reiterate, we have a chance with sites such as the Oscar Traynor Road. we have a chance with sites such as St Michael's House, with cost rental being delivered, to actually change the dynamic in terms of doing that. So it's not just about passing legislation, but it's actually about putting the money where our mouth is and Absolutely. Allowing local authorities or the Land Development Agency to know that they're going to have the comfort of the money to be there. Because I think what happens in local authorities at the moment is they don't feel that they have the comfort of the funding. I'll give you an example again down in Poolbeg, and I think this is going to be really important in terms of affordability. Simon Coveney promised that 650 affordable homes would be funded. We don't know what the tenure type is. We don't know if they're going to be funded. We also don't know how much Johnny Ronan is going to charge for those so-called affordable homes, because he's tried to charge 600,000 for affordable homes in the past.
And there's in that development, it's going to be socially affordable, and 2,800 private homes in that development.
And Poolbeg is going to be really, really important.
Is Sinn Féin going to object to those?
Oh, absolutely not. We fully supported Poolbeg. In fact, in fairness to Dublin City Council, there was unanimous agreement for the Poolbeg Strategic Development Zone. It's the highest density residential development that the state has ever seen. What was also really important is, thanks to a really strong campaign led by local residents in Ringsend and Irishtown, not only are we going to get 10% social, we're getting another 15% affordable. That's the 650 units that Rebecca mentioned. The tragedy, however, is the last government, when Owen Murphy was the minister, were offered an opportunity to buy the land on which those affordable homes were to be developed out in the Glass Bottle site at a discount. And Owen Murphy and the then Secretary General refused to fund Dublin City Council to acquire that land. Johnny Ronan has now stepped in. It's well reported. He's paid probably 25% above the guide price for the land that's going to push up all the development costs. And Brendan Kenny, the Director of Housing at Dublin City Council, was saying they simply don't know how we're going to deliver affordability in that site. So here's the crucial test, because Johnny Ronan can now come in and say, oh, they're going to cost 600,000, 700,000. How are we going to guarantee the hardworking families of Ringsend and Irishtown and the surrounding areas can buy houses below €300,000? In fairness to Darragh O'Brien, he's inherited a mess of Owen Murphy's. But it's really symptomatic of what Orla said earlier, which is far too much developer-led policy, not enough direct state investment. And that's a mess that I think is going to be very hard to fix. Now, again, we'll work with the minister, as will other parties, to fix it. But unless you can deliver rents at below €1,000, unless you can deliver homes below €230,000 on that site, then the legal requirement for genuine affordable homes will be broken. And I've asked the minister repeatedly, can he explain how he's going to do it? And he has yet to give us a straight answer.
Yeah, we can only deliver affordability into the future. We have the problems, the legacy problems of the past, we have to deal with them. We have to deliver affordability. For us, it is supply and affordability. They are the two criteria that have to be met in terms of solving the housing crisis. And we have to use every available tool and asset to do it. The state-owned land that is available to us, but also any of the properties that are available. These are people's lives. Like, when we talk about the housing crisis, it's kind of in this abstract sense, but honestly, people's lives are on hold.
Oh, listen, I can just read. I have a whole screen full of people's lives here.
I can only imagine. And I talk to people every day. I talk to people who are in emergency accommodation, people who are at risk of losing their home, or people who just can't get on with their lives, people who are earning good incomes, doing good jobs, just want to be able to move on with their lives. This is a number one priority for us as a society, but also as an economy.
I want to bring in Orla. She hasn't been. Orla, you're listening to how this debate is developing here.
Yeah, I think there hasn't been any real discussion, I suppose, or scrutiny of the Land Development Agency. I would have a real concern, given how that bill is framed, that it is again a market rate solution. It doesn't say that the land will be acquired by the LDA at a lower price. It says that they will pay market price to other state agencies for the land, and clearly that will then have to be passed on, and that will limit the amount of actually true affordability. It seems more a model that will follow what we've seen in Poolbeg and in O'Devany, which is that the land is packaged, that there is money changes hands at the beginning, and there's a promise of social and affordable later, but it's all predicated on there being a market for the private housing. So, you know, we're back to where we were previously, where these large deals are very, very market dependent, and if our market housing market drops, or prices drop, or interest rates go up, we might see those sites stalled again. I think we need to de-risk them by breaking them up and having more developers in smaller parcels and not put all the eggs in one basket.
Yeah, can I put that to you? Because I know Sinn Féin have this issue. You, Rebecca, you've raised this before in relation to this feature of the Land Development Agency, that the land must be acquired at market rates. It seems an extraordinary position to bake into something which is supposed to be delivering affordability.
Yeah, no, the minister through regulations will set the affordability criteria on the land.
Why is this in the legislation as it stands?
The legislation includes the regulations, or refers to the regulations at least. And the regulations is where you wouldn't have one size fits all. You know, the affordability criteria in Dublin versus Longford would be different. But the objective
Why
of
is
the
it
land,
there at all, though? Nobody has been able to explain that.
Because they're sitting on assets. The land is sitting as assets on other state agencies. So the Department of Defence or the Department of Health or, you know, various state agencies. The land development agency has been set up to strategically manage the land. In the first instance, create a database of all of the state-owned lands. Secondarily, identify which of the state-owned lands then are suitable for housing. And where affordability is an issue, as in the big urban centres like Dublin and Cork and Galway and other big urban centres, affordability will be set as the value. So the land value will be determined by affordability. And that will discount the land then for development, primarily by the local authorities or by approved housing bodies or by sustainable ethical investment funds.
Let Orla respond.
And sorry, can I just finish? And Orla, I promise I'll finish then. The sole objective is to deliver affordable housing both to purchase and rent and to introduce affordable cost rental into the state.
Orla.
No, I understand the intention, but if affordability in Dublin is set at 450 or 500,000 for apartments, that's not going to factor into any reduction on the land value. The
it's
land
not.
Value will be full market
Katie,
value.
Katie, can I just say though,
that's not affordable. The LDA, that's just not affordable.
We've just been through 12 hours of select committee over the last 3 weeks dealing with very detailed amendments. We have another 2 hours next week. It's an incredibly complex bill, and in fact, it would probably merit a conversation like this for an hour rather than slotting it into 30 seconds. I just want to say two things, though, because we're rightly talking about affordability more and more, less and less public debate is going on something that Mary did raise, and it's very important, is the homelessness crisis. 2 weeks ago, last week, a report was published, an interim report by the HSE and Dublin Regional Homeless Executive by Dr. Noston O'Carroll, on the very significant increase in the deaths of people experiencing homelessness. Very, very little media attention because there was so much else going on. We cannot forget that while we're also trying to tackle the social affordable housing crisis, there are far more people experiencing homelessness dying on our streets this year and last year. And therefore, that report, which has been published, needs to be urgently taken up by both government and opposition and its recommendations implemented as a matter of urgency. And the only other thing I want to say is, and it's a shameless plug, the families in Donegal, Mayo and County Clare, who are devastated by a really, really bad scheme to try and remediate the impacts of Mica Block and Pirate Block, are in Dublin on Tuesday demanding 100% redress.
And isn't there another issue? Apart from that, now, I'm looking at the clock, we've only a minute on this, but there is an issue that those are very specific issues, the legacy issues, latent defect issues.
And the minister is engaging with those families directly.
There are serious questions about whether the current legislation in place, if I were to buy a house tomorrow and I were to discover a latent defect 10 years' time, I would still be in the same position. And I mean, that's a very worrying situation to find ourselves when we see what happened in the past.
Absolutely, it is. It's very worrying and it's very upsetting for those families in Donegal and Mayo. And I was speaking to the minister yesterday about it, and I know the minister is engaged in it and it was discussed at Cabinet. The scheme that was, the minister, to be fair to him, from when he came into office, made a priority of having the scheme launched, of meeting with the families. And he himself has said 90%, the current scheme covers 90% of the cost. He himself has said that the scheme needs to be reviewed. He's reviewing that with the local authorities, with the families, with the action groups. And I welcome and support the families. I wish they didn't have to come to the convention centre next Tuesday. But it is an issue and it is at the top of the government's agenda.
OK, I'm going to have to take my last break.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And just in the last minute, just give you another flavour of what listeners are telling us tonight. I bet that in 2024 and 2025, those who took out the shared equity schemes will be the ones most up to their neck in negative equity. It's irresponsible and stupid to over-leverage folks in this white-hot market. Another listener says, what about single people in all caps? I earn 28,000 and will never own a home. I am 34 years old. please, can someone explain why we can't go to a builder and employ them to build a house? Well, I think this, we are hearing about the capacity issues there as well. And the first thing government should do is cap the price of houses immediately to stop any further rises in prices. And we have another elephant in the room. We have a herd of elephants in the room. Apparently, this one is Bord Pleanála. As long as they retain the ability to block any housing, it will remain in short supply. And we're over time now. Tonight's producer was Caroline Dalton. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon. Dave Gibson was on sound. I want to thank my panel. I want to thank you all for listening. That's it for the season for Late Debate, but we did enjoy the time we had with you, and hopefully we'll see you again in September, and I'll hand you over now to Colin Murray on Late Date.